Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
On a Tuesday, Cofield and Company, Adam Hill is here. Damon is with us in the Findlay Toyota Studios. Busy day. We got two more tilts in the regular season for the Golden Knights, so we'll preview that in a couple of minutes.
You think people on the air can hear this, by the way? I've never heard this in the building before. You know how loud the music is next door?
Classic rock, baby!
it's been like that in the past.
I don't remember hearing music
really
that loud in here.
Yeah, Carlota used to blast away. Whatever, it's a music station. What are we going to do?
97.1.
You don't need to
finish it.
Number one home for classic rock.
Yes.
If you want to tune in.
You don't need to have the music.
No one can hear that. They'd be having to hear real hard.
If we can hear this loud in the studio, it has to be going on the microphone, you would think.
No.
Okay. I'm wrong.
You'd be surprised. I mean, we're doing remotes at Circa and TI. And
I have to assume the music is coming through there, too.
Not as loud as you think.
Maybe it's because I have a headache. It's just.
Oh, no. What's going on? You may have a headache. I don't
know. Went too hard on a Monday night?
Yeah, too hard.
He's writing a lot.
Writing. Yeah, it was real hard at the desk in the house. Draft stories, NHL playoff previews.
Life is good. You got a lot to cover.
That's true.
Spin it positively.
That's true.
Right?
It's true.
A little college basketball to start, because we'll have to get to college basketball later in the week. The portal has reopened for football, and the portal is really humming. Again, they take a little break. I don't even know what the dates are anymore. I think it was closed from like the 4th to the 12th, so now that's humming. Yesterday, UNLV got a commit from Jaden Henley, who – did you go down to the SoCal tournament? Did you cover that?
No, not this
year. A couple years ago. It was a couple years ago, right?
Oh, for DePaul? No, I wasn't there for that one.
Yeah, he was at Minnesota, Jaden Henley, and then okay. DePaul, and now 6'7 wing, and we'll see what else. I think UNLV has a pretty aggressive schedule set up here because some players did leave. So I think the plan there was, let's open up some spots. I mean, they transferred on their own. But let's open up some spots here and get a little bigger, get some more shooting, and we'll talk about the build and what it looks like in the end. But interesting on the schedule front. And the reason I mention this is because the Mountain West Conference got kind of beat up and bullied during the NCAA tournament, right before the NCAA tournament when they got six teams in. Track how all the teams, maybe aside from Air Force, track how all the teams try to schedule in the non-con, because that is the way you get those super high net ratings. Now, they may change whatever. They may tweak some things. But everyone in the conference should be looking to go strong in the non-con so they don't have to hear about, oh, well, their net is high because they just beat up on each other, which was a misnomer last year. But anyway, UNLV and Memphis are actually going to play a home-and-home series. And Memphis, certainly a name from the past, and they've been solid lately. But they'll have a home-and-home. And like we said, this is not a power – what is it now, Power Four? Minus the Big East, which is pretending to be part of the Power Five. Home and home with Memphis, which is a quality opponent. And, it does show maybe San Diego's the other school in the conference can actually do home and homes with the top eight conferences in the country. Pretty much everyone else in the conference has to play neutral or just 0-1. They're not getting a home game.
Yeah, for the most part, it's tough to schedule. It's one of the things of being here. Like, you're too good to host teams because they don't want to come and lose. And
yeah, the home venues are a living hell. Half of them are at elevation. St. John's in New Mexico actually are going to have a series, but that's a family deal.
How'd that get booked?
So the Patino's going to go at it. New Mexico does have to go to St. John's, and I believe they're playing in the Mecca, the greatest basketball arena in the world, according to New Yorkers. And we'll see if Richard, I'm sure he's anticipating getting a return to Albuquerque, but who knows if Slick Rick will coach me on this year. That's your year. It's a year of your thing.
Who knows if Richard's here beyond this year?
Good point. Yeah, Richard was a hot candidate for some jobs. Other news on the collegiate front. Did you see that the Big 12, we sort of anticipated this, The Big 12 for football will be doing their media days here in Vegas on July 9th and 10th.
Why wouldn't they?
Fill in that hole that was opened up by the dissolving of the Pac-12. I have a feeling down the road the Big 12 could be home from time to time. Check that. That Vegas will be home for the Big 12 from time to time for maybe a championship game or the men's basketball tournament. I did see one suggestion from BJ Raines, who covers Boise, doing a really good job of covering Boise spring practice, that the Mountain West could move it at the same time. Don't do that. Don't try to freaking encroach upon the Big 12. Have it a couple of days later. Let us cover everything. Come on now.
Well, I think the idea would be to get national media in, right?
Yeah, so do it back-to-back. Don't do it on top of it.
Well, they'll probably leave, so you just do it at night. When they do it in the morning, you do yours in the afternoon or the evening.
The days are way too long. You need a whole day. Because you got, but I'll TV, just assume print, if you and end, radio.
If you end the Big 12, people just leave.
Well, I think you'd have at least the big college football people stay around for a back-to-back, and it's Vegas. So don't go on top of each other. Anyway, that's coming up in early July. Never too soon to get into college football, which, like I said earlier, the transfer portal is open. The second half of the transfer portal, we'll get some numbers on this. It looked like Dion and Colorado Prime appears to have told lots of kids this time around, get out.
Maybe, but several were starters.
So what does that say?
Says maybe some of them just left.
Or some of them could be purchased by other schools.
Or they couldn't cut the mustard at Colorado.
Well, that's what I was getting at, but Adam gave them a soft landing and saying, hey, maybe they can go somewhere better.
Well, I think that they're... I assume
most times at losing programs like Colorado or developing programs like UNLV, the kids who leave are told there's a comfortable spot somewhere else for you. They're not told, hey, we're going to upgrade from you. But I think that could be the case in a lot of these situations.
Well, I think that happens, but I think it's, you know, we start to lean on that and just say, well, if somebody leaves, that they were told to leave. Like, a lot of them.
No one says that. I'm the only one in the country who says that. Literally one of the only people on radio who gets what's going on. And I've tried to tell people for a couple of years, the kids are not bad people. Oftentimes they are told, get out. But you're right. That was kind of sad. But Dion built that narrative by saying, basically, you know, I'm bringing my Louis. You better get your luggage ready.
But these are guys
you're not ready to go.
These are guys he brought in. This is not guys
They were knockoff Louis. Yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah. Which is also interesting.
We don't need him at our program.
Which would question you, did he panic last year in replacing a lot of his players? Because I think he did. And can they not develop players? Is he not fun to play for? By the way, is he not around? We hear a lot of that he's really not very present in the offseason. In Boulder.
Yeah, I don't think he doesn't live there, right? So, I mean, I don't think that's really a surprise. I never thought he was going to Colorado to be like the coach for the next 20 years and establish a program and be there every day. And
so then why are kids going? Just
money?
For money?
Money in the flashiness of the program? Like, it'd be cool.
So it's just a one-year
stopping
point?
I'd love to go play there. Yeah, I'd love to go play there for a year if I was in college.
This is absurd.
It'd be awesome.
This show has begun with just arguing everything.
That's awesome. We talked about it last year. The shoes, all of our social media. Like, that's going to boost your profile no matter where you go. I would love that. If you're 18, you would love that. Actually, you probably wouldn't. I think you're a curmudgeon at 17.
As a guy with a show bet on Colorado, you know, this program, he's there for the long haul.
No, I want this. I want our bet to be interesting.
Yeah, he's getting in new Louis.
I don't know.
That's all that is. Like I said.
I want Colorado to compete, so this Arizona-Colorado bet will have some legs.
I just realized that. Dion will be here.
That's a good point.
Media day. Let's go.
Do we seek out Brent Brennan from Arizona?
Sure.
To talk about not only the bet, but he also got very miffed at me on the TV call of San Jose State and UNLV.
Wasn't he very close with Marcus Arroyo?
He was.
Yeah.
We said 99% of, not that they're going to have any idea, or he's going to have any idea what we're saying about Marcus Arroyo.
No, I thought it would be interesting to talk about him. How's he doing?
Especially at a rival school.
Sure.
It's funny how that turned out.
Yeah.
My guess is he would have been at Arizona State had Arizona State not hired him, basically like 3 weeks earlier.
Yeah.
Crazy times. All right, so what's the setup for tonight's game at the Fortress? Still something to play for, but some players not available?
Yeah, Chandler Stevenson and Anthony Mantha are not playing tonight. They are, you know, resting, although Bruce Cassidy was very careful to say, we're not resting players. Like, these are guys that are legitimately hurt for, you know, a game, possibly two. Hasn't ruled anybody in the lineup out. Not a single player on the roster has been ruled out for game one of the playoffs, which will be next week. Some speculation out there that the Kings tanked last night to avoid Edmonton. And the Golden Knights are now in the driver's seat. If they win both of their final two games, they will be playing Edmonton on the road, starting with game one of the next round. So do the Golden Knights try to one-up them and lose to a really bad team at home to try to force their way out of the series against Edmonton? I don't know. I think the Knights believe they match up better with Edmonton than the Kings would. And I don't think the Knights are necessarily scared of Edmonton or Dallas. And I don't know that you would say Dallas is an easier matchup than Edmonton. So I don't think they're going to be tanking. I don't know that the Kings were either. But the Kings do seem to be scared of Edmonton. I don't think they want any part of that matchup. So if the Knights do lose tonight, maybe we'll see the Kings go tank another one. Was it Wednesday or Thursday? Both the Knights and the Kings are going to be massive favorites. Kings have one game left. Knights have two left. They're massive favorites in all the games. So if the Knights win out, they'll be going to Dallas. They'll be going to Edmonton. If they lose a game, more likely go to Dallas.
Sounds like you really, really, really want to see the Dallas matchup against VGK. You're intrigued by that one.
I think anybody would. Okay. I think anybody would not want to have to travel across to Canada and try to find flights on very short notice.
So you're sitch. You will be going to Edmonton. You might not be going to Dallas.
Well, we don't know. Okay. We'll find out.
What are you talking about? I want to see Connor McDavid here.
That'd be game three. Well, you can see him in the second round, too.
Ah, who knows if they make it.
Second round.
Actually, it'd be the third.
The second round series has more oomph to it.
Yeah. Actually, it would be the final. If they finish in the wild card, then the final would be potentially Edmonton.
It's a good point.
Western Conference.
There's a whole storyline here. Well, I don't think we're ever going to tell it, but I know Adam has certain interests in this dealio. Have any of us processed? So playing games tonight, we're going to join in progress for the second game. We'll get you updates on the Lakers game. That's at 4:30. Has anyone processed that by Thursday? I don't know that it could be announced that soon. I think it'll be a while. But that the next 2 days could be the last times we see LeBron James. Are we all just, hey, you know what? Well, one, they're automatically in the playoffs. That's no, not at all.
No.
And two, like, has he changed his mind over the last 2 months where, hey, if we don't get in to the main field, kind of don't like being in a situation where we're not, you know, top-notch competitive. And my grand plan of playing with Bronny, he probably needs a couple more years in college to just start developing. Will anyone process this, or this is just?
I think everybody just assumes there's no way he's leaving before Bronny's in the NBA.
Really?
Yeah, Steve, back it up. He's a true and honest podcaster now. He knows how to get the people talking.
Okay.
That's all this is. He's coming back. Don't you worry.
I don't know. I want to watch, especially if they lose today. I don't know what's going to happen after tomorrow or whenever the next game is, 2 days from now.
Yeah, it's certainly possible if they lost and they look ugly and they lose again. They'd have to lose twice to be out of the field. If they lose both and it's ugly, maybe he would leave. But I think everybody just assumes there's no way. He said for so long he's not leaving until Bronny's here. He's been so insistent about it. Could change his mind, but I don't think anybody is really looking serious at that possibility, even though it is a possibility.
And as the playoffs begin in the NBA, the theme of the playoffs the last few years has been who can make it near the finish line and have their star players upright. And it looks like the Bucks already are looking at a playoffs where it's going to be touch and go with Giannis.
Oh, yeah.
Calf?
They're already preparing for the possibility that he won't be playing. At least the game one, maybe the first round.
Is it a left calf? I saw a list. I'll have to go back and look at it. I saw a list basically that the left leg has had some issues. There's been it wasn't tendonitis, but anyway, there's been calf, Achilles, hammy, that the left leg has just been struggling to return to a 100% all season. Not all season, but last 2 months. It's been lingering up and down the leg.
Well, good thing he's played the most games this year than he has in the last six seasons because we're forcing guys to play now.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
That's cool because we got to see him on like a random Tuesday night. Nobody wants him in the playoffs. I'd rather make him play in like a national TV game on a Tuesday night in March.
Oh, boy.
If he wants to be the MVP, he's got to prove it. Okay?
Yeah.
We got 2 hours and 45 minutes left of salty Adam Hill. Stick around. We'll get the report on yesterday's media availability as minicamp is here. Max Crosby had a lot to say, especially on fighting, but I like this whole speech on work ethic, and we'll find out what the other guys said when they hit the podium.
Now, back to Cofield and Company in the Findlay Toyota studio. I was raised on girl, raised on girl. I got my honky-tonk attitude from Joe Dippy. Daddy did too, it's family tradition. But someone cranks it up, you can't help but listen. My luck banging sounds like George Strait.
Just kick it off with Cofield and Company on a Tuesday on Hill, Cofield. Come on, giveaway time, 364-1100, 364-1100. We got a couple of tickets to Chris Young, who's playing in town later in the summer. Young Love and Saturday Night's Tour. It's at Resorts World Theater. AXS.com is where you can get your tickets, but Chris Young is playing, and Damon, Cowboy Cotton, has a pair of tickets right now to go see Chris Young. 364-1100, caller number 7. All right, so busy day yesterday. Out in Raidersville, Max Crosby was, I guess, the star of media availability. He spoke for a long time. It was like 22 minutes.
Yeah. Seemed very interested in speaking, too.
Very engaged. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Other standout, because we have plenty to talk about from Max, but anyone else stand out in terms of some comments, some questions? You made a comment yesterday about Robert Spillane and how much he loves football.
Yeah, and that's always been my kind of long-running. Like, Robert Spillane just is football. Like, he's just the kind of person you put on a field and just say, go hit somebody. Like, that's kind of what his whole life is. But, you know, he just talked about feeling more comfortable and settling into Las Vegas. He's obviously announced toward the end of last season on Sunday Night Football that he's expecting his first child. And he's been kind of talking to a lot of guys about that. He said there's a lot of girl dads on the team, and he's getting advice from them. So he's starting to get, you know, locked in with that more. And I feel like he kind of is in mid-season form right now. He just go play a game. He just wants to hit somebody, I think. So that was pretty good. And then, you know, Aiden O'Connell and Andre James aren't the, you know, they're not the most charismatic or talkative guys. Actually, Andre James is in the locker room, but
yeah,
not really comfortable on the podium.
What's the approach with Aiden O'Connell? Is he battling for the starting quarterback job, or is he 100% the number two? And has Antonio Pierce said who's one, who's two?
Well, I think the finances said who's one and who's two, but I imagine if these are the two quarterbacks on the roster, they'll be in a battle. I would think Gardner Minshew would be slightly ahead at this point, but you know they're both new to the system, so they kind of have an even playing field in that regard. Aiden O'Connell has done what he's done. I think he's shown that he's, you know, I don't know, he's capable of playing in the NFL, not much more. So
you're not very high on him.
No.
Kind of others think there's hope. Why are you not high on him?
Well, I mean, I just don't think, unless you're an elite thrower of the football, a complete lack of mobility doesn't work in the NFL now. It just doesn't. And he's a good passer. He is. Good processor, good thinker. He does a lot of the things you have to do. I just think it's a very exceptional talent, exceptional level of arm talent that you can play in this league without having some mobility, and he has none.
Guys being signed to help with protection around O'Connell. And
yeah.
Minshew, a veteran OT, has been slightly decorated in the past. Who'd they bring in?
Yeah, more O-lineman. He's played a lot of center, played some guard, and I think that there's a thought process that he could potentially help play tackle and has done it very little bit in the league in Cody Whitehair. And I think the biggest thing is that he's been in the system. He's been with Luke Getsy. He's played in the system. He understands it. And Andre James actually talked about that, just getting a guy in that is familiar with all the concepts. They have a new offensive line coach as well. So all the concepts, all the terminology and all that stuff, to have a guy in the room that's been there and played with him, I think is one of the main things that, you know, they liked about bringing him in. And some of the players have already kind of gravitated to him and trying to start to pick up all the terminology and things like that. So that is where they're at right now, just trying to learn everything. And yesterday's the first day they really had to like get on the chalkboard and start doing some of those sort of things.
But do you think there's a favorite at right tackle, right?
Yeah, somebody in the draft. But I mean, right now,
oh, somebody in the draft.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, there's a reason that offensive tackle and cornerback are the two favorites for where the Raiders are going to go. Thayer Munford is there. Like, Thayer Munford played solid football. He's a good player. I don't think that they're, you know, nobody's, you know, doing somersaults if he was the day one starter, but I think he's fine. I don't think it's as pressing a need. I don't think it's a panic situation if Thayer Munford is your right tackle. I mean, I think that he's a, you know, a serviceable player, more than serviceable player. He can develop with time out there. But people that say they just don't have an offensive tackle on the roster to play on the right side, is that's not really true.
More of the draft odds are out. The position odds, Raiders, which position will they draft, was out a couple weeks ago, but more people are jumping on board those numbers. And as you just hinted at a couple minutes ago, O-lineman, plus 150 is the favorite, plus 160, cornerback, and then 2-1 is quarterback, and then it drops way down to edge rusher, wide receiver, tight end, and then way, way down to linebacker, safety, and running back at the bottom. The odds I pulled, no listing for punter kicker, which I think another book. Was that a book in town that had punter kicker?
No, it wasn't. It was off. It was 200-1, and I wanted to bet the no.
They're not going to make that available.
They're not.
It's not going to happen.
I wish. I'd put $400,000 on the no.
Do you have $400,000? Do you
sell my house?
Do you have?
I would. If they make the no price available,
yeah,
I would do it.
Well, they wouldn't do that.
Of course they wouldn't. That's why, because it would be too easy of a bet.
Do you have a mock draft that you look at and you're like, you know what, that guy's usually right? Because Kuiper's has been out. You know, Kuiper does a different version seemingly every week. And I don't know if this is like a Fox-generated thing online, but Pete Schrager, there's a lot of hype about him because he's gotten a bunch of picks right in the past.
Yeah.
He had the Raiders going offensive lineman with the tackle from Penn State.
Olufoshinwu?
Not Fautanu. I saw them next to each other, and I'm losing my sight, and two, you get that kind of optical illusion. I was like, there's brothers? It's draft? Because there's a kid who's local.
Sure.
From what, Liberty? Who played at Washington.
Fautanu.
Who's expected to go in somewhere in that 10 to 25 range, too.
He's a good player. No question.
So why would this kid be the choice after Alt, who he's got Alt very high up at number 7 to the Titans. And by the way, we're going to do a Titans draft preview in just a little bit.
Yeah, I think Alt has kind of separated himself a little bit at the top. I think he's a day one ready starter to just slide in and take over a job. And a couple of those guys I think will be starting too. I just don't know if they're quite as NFL ready at this point in their career. Alt is just kind of better just all around, just like, all right, get him in there and you can go. So I think that's why he's kind of separated himself a little bit near the top. But I think there's about four guys that I think they'd be very comfortable with. And one of the reasons I think that they will look at offensive tackle is that it is a very deep position. And you would say, well, if it's deep, then you can get somebody, you know, later in the draft. But it's deep at the top. It's deep in the first round. There's, you know, four or five guys that I think you'd be comfortable with starting from week one of the NFL. And so, you know, going in that direction and making sure you have somebody who's an impact starter from day one, which is something you didn't get last year in the first round, I think would be beneficial for the Raiders for sure. But it's a position, and I think corner is a position that's open as well. If they were to get one of the top guys at corner, there's plays to be made, there's reps to be had on the field right away, which is not really the case in many other positions on the team right now. There's a lot of positions that are filled, so those are the spots I think you're looking at for somebody to bring in and be an impact right away, and I think that's why they'd probably be looking in that direction. But in terms of who do I look at, I think Schrager's second mock draft, usually he puts out one like right now and then one like a day before, is usually fairly good. I think Daniel Jeremiah is the guy I trust the most in terms of his evaluations, but you know, also you have to wait until kind of the end, and his is more, he might he might not have the right teams in the right order, but he has who the best thought of prospects are. So you can get a much better sense of where guys are going to go based on where his top 50 is when it all shakes out.
Thursday, we're going to be out at Stadium Swim, Circle Las Vegas, Cofield and Company on the road. That's every Thursday, but this Thursday we'll be out there for sure. I don't know why I just said that. We're out there every Thursday. All the sports you want on a 143-foot screen at the greatest pool venue Las Vegas has ever seen. I call it a venue because it's not just the six pools. It's that mega screen with the screens around it as well. If you want to get a day bed or cabana, upgrade it a little bit, go to CircleLasVegas.com. And we are on the road at Stadium Swim every Thursday. Hang with us and party. And again, if you want more information, go to CircleLasVegas.com.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield and Company rolling on. Did you see the numbers in for the Masters?
I don't think people were too fired up.
What happened? TV viewing numbers were, well, what happened is what's happening to almost every other sport.
Saturation of the market?
No, I just don't think that traditional ratings measure where everyone is watching. I don't know that the Masters is less popular, but by the TV numbers and I suppose some streaming, although I think streaming usually comes out a couple days after, but yeah, the Masters with a guy that could be a dominant story here the next couple of years, right? Dominance is good for a sport. Scottie Scheffler, the final round averaged 9.6 million viewers on CBS. It was a 22% decline from last year. Hell, even Scheffler's win a couple of years ago. Well, actually, his win a couple of years ago wasn't that highly rated. But anyway, overall, down 20% from last year, and one of the lowest numbers since 1993. Is it a lack of sizzle, Damon? We talked about Scottie Scheffler yesterday, that solid guy, had a good story that they kind of drummed up, that his wife could have a kid, he could walk. But didn't do well.
Yeah, I don't think, like you said, a lack of sizzle. And also the guys that were competing, you know, before they all fell apart, you know, the Colin Morikawas of the world, where I don't think those names are sexy enough to get people to tune in. The guys chasing him also weren't that exciting to watch as well.
Who's sexy? So like Koepka?
Rory McIlroy?
McIlroy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Sexy.
Rom? Maybe.
He said Rom. Or are there some people out there who are like, as we often point out, that, I don't know, man, the country club attitude, the anti-fan thing, seems like most of the top golfers, I'm not going to say all of them, but have had some run-in with the fans where they're basically like, shut up, we don't care about you. This time it was Zach Johnson. Does that turn people off? Is that guy from Iowa?
He seems like an Iowa guy.
You're in trouble.
I actually think, I don't know, for some reason, and I think it actually should help ratings and interest that they don't play together all the time. But I do think the fractured tour somehow hurts it. And I would think it would help just because, like, hey, only four times a year you get to see everybody on the same course. But for some reason, I don't think it builds up, like, the rivalries and the intrigue for whatever they need to be.
Could it be that the actual golfers don't care? How can we care if they don't care? Maybe they need to play into the rivalry more.
Well, this, for
it's died down.
Half the guys, this is the only time they get to be competitive. I mean, they're prepaid on Live. Like, they don't have to be competitive every week. So, you know, and whatever they win comes out of their money they've already won. So it just doesn't make any sense. So you would think they'd be fired up to try to compete. Although maybe it's the old thing. And, you know, Dana White said it about Conor McGregor. You're like, it's tough to get up and go to the gym. Tough to get up and go to the gym in the morning if you have $750 million in the bank.
Yep.
And for some of these guys, they've already been prepaid. They don't have to, you know, play for their dinner every week. Why do I have to be competitive all the time?
Maybe the PGA should get in the ear of the, like, Rory McIlroy. He's denied the report that he was offered $850 million. Maybe the PGA should say, hey, man, tell everybody how bad you're going to whoop on those Live guys. They don't belong on the same course as you. Drum up some interest.
Maybe he didn't do it because he is getting the $850 soon.
Yeah.
From Live.
Possibly.
His people denied it. I don't necessarily believe it. If it is $850 million, that's ridiculous. You got to walk.
Yeah, why wouldn't you? I mean, especially because we've talked
there's going to be a partnership right. down the road.
That's what I was going to say.
Grab the money now.
That's what I was going to say. There was a very strong moral argument to not take the money at one point. But now, they're on the verge of merging back.
Yep.
Take the money and then come back.
And on Zach Johnson, who is indeed from Iowa, one, getting pissed off and telling fans to shut up. And then I think he like whipped the ball to the side. I didn't realize back in Phoenix at the Garbage Open, he was like flipping out on fans.
So he's the.
And I guess he's disliked. Did he pick? I guess people didn't like his. He was a captain at a Ryder's Cup a while back, and people didn't like his choices, and they lost. And
so he's the Caitlin Clark of the PGA Tour.
Well, Caitlin Clark's not disliked.
But he's from Iowa.
I wasn't connecting everyone in Iowa.
I am.
You know. I mean, we like your friend Ben. LV Cabby's cool. I mean, they're very defensive of Iowa, but that's fine.
They are. All the people in Iowa are very defensive.
They round up.
That's all they have.
Form a circle and fight you guys off.
I think that's pretty much all they have, I think.
Just going to say, Zach Johnson doesn't have a likable face.
What is a likable face?
You know it when you see it.
Does Adam have a likable face?
Yeah, oh, Adam's a cool guy. You know, he's my uncle's best friend when he comes into town. But Zach Johnson, I see how he could be rubbing some people the wrong way.
Just by the face?
Just by the face.
Is there any particular expression or just his resting face?
Just his resting face. Hmm. Everybody out there, text in 702-364-1100. Does Zach Johnson have a likable face? That's all I'm saying.
Coming up next. We're going to get into the Titans draft and what the squad is looking like, what the organization is looking like, since they've turned the page on one of their greatest players ever in Derrick Henry.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Let's continue our path to the draft. Cofield and Company, Steve, Adam, and Damon, and we want to get into another team in the top 10, and that is the Tennessee Titans. And we have information, but this guy really has the information as we get into Tennessee and what's happening from a position need standpoint with Teron Davenport. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're good. I think my partner is very much suffering from allergies. Believe it or not, we get crushed by allergies here in Las Vegas, so he's having a tough time. Take it easy on him.
Yeah, the pollen is deep here, too, man.
Take it easy on him if he comes across as obnoxious. He kind of is already.
Yeah, I'm very ornery right now.
You're struggling. He's struggling a lot. I just want to talk about the setup of the offseason and the franchise having a different look now. Derrick Henry is gone. How big was he to the franchise? And I'm kind of wondering if fans were pissed initially or they got it, that they just couldn't pay a running back that much. What was the mood around Henry moving on?
Yeah, well, I mean, Derrick Henry, he was the offense. Everything revolved around him. They made sure he got his touches for the most part, and they got success from that. Now with him being gone, it's going to be a different look, more passing, more dual threat as far as the running and passing from the running backs. But with Derrick Henry being gone, it's been balanced. Fans understood that it was just one of those things where it took its course and they needed to go a different direction. Whereas others, when they signed Tony Pollard to the deal that Pollard got, they're like, well, why didn't you just sign Henry? But that was never going to work because this team had to go a different direction.
How is Henry going to do in Baltimore? Did they get out in time, or is he kill it?
Listen, I think he's going to kill it. I know you look at the fullback, Patrick Richard, you're talking about 300 pounds. You combine that with Derrick Henry at 247, you got 550 pounds of man coming at you. As a linebacker, I don't want any parts of that. So you have that. But then you also look at Lamar Jackson being in the mix. And when they run that stretch, right, that defender is always, that backside defender, like that linebacker, he's always going to have to watch to make sure that Lamar doesn't pull it and boot the opposite way. So what that does is leave that cutback lane, like one less defender in that second level, whereas Derrick Henry, he loves to stretch it out and then cut it back. And I think it's going to be, he's going to kill it. I can't wait to watch the Ravens this year.
Teron, I am a Titans fan first and foremost, so I've got to ask, with the Titans acquiring Legarius Sneed, is this a situation where I'm so pessimistic? Why did the Chiefs want to get rid of him? Was this a good deal for the Titans?
Yeah, it was a good deal for the Titans. And really, it just came down to, okay, is it going to be Chris Jones or Legarius Sneed? And Chris Jones happened to agree to the deal first, and he's the guy, and it's just that's the way it was, right? And this is a team, when you talk about the Chiefs, that develop quarterbacks, or excuse me, cornerbacks well. So, and this group, there's going to be a lot to choose from. So you look for the Titans. I don't know if there's a better free agent or trade candidate to franchise match than Sneed to the Titans and what Denard Wilson wants to do. And I can't wait to watch them just as far as that ability to just say, hey, look, that's your cat. You cover him. You travel with him. But then I want you to jam at the line of scrimmage. I want you to be aggressive. Cause that chatter to make the quarterback come off that receiver and have to look to his next read, which should give Jeffrey Simmons and the crew some time to get to him. So I think it's going to be a really good match. I know that there's the conversation about the knees. I asked him about that, and he said, look, man, I came here to play football. My knees are good. I know what to do to maintain them. So I think he's going to be fine.
Are we sure about Will Levis?
No, not at all. He didn't play a full season. You know what I mean? So I could definitely say you're not sure about him. But some of the things that you did see, obviously the Falcons game, that one, some tremendous throws. But then you look at the Steelers game, I thought he played well there. And for me, what's good about him is just the progression that I've seen him make. And it's funny because, you know, that Wednesday after the Steelers game, I asked him about not being so locked in on throwing the deep ball, because that deep pass he threw on a fourth down to Traylon Burks, it was you know, way down the field. It was fourth and like five. He had Kyle Phillips coming open underneath. And I asked him about, you know, being more situationally aware and knowing what you had coming backside, you know. And his offensive coordinator came in and spoke for him and just said, look, man, like that's an alert. If it's single high, we got our guy out there one-on-one, we're going to him. And that's what happened. But then you saw as the games progressed, he started to come off that deep shot and go to what was underneath there, a more sure shot for him. So I think that's really good. Then you look at this, he has to improve his pocket awareness. He got rocked too many times where that clock wasn't there for him as far as him knowing when he has to either get rid of the ball or flee the pocket.
It seems like there's not a more sure position targeted to a team than offensive line to the Titans. Is there any chance that's not where they go?
Oh, there's a chance. I mean, Malik Nabers being on the board, if he's there, hey, I wouldn't be surprised. You know what I mean? I know for a fact if Harrison is there, like, that's the pick. You know what I mean? So it just is different things that may influence it, but you're right. You know, just like we talked about Sneed and the Titans is a perfect match in free agency, trade, et cetera. I don't know if there's a better match for a player and non-quarterback and franchise than Joe Alt and the Titans. Left tackle has been a mess. Last year they gave up 64 sacks, almost half of them, 30 of them, 29, came from their left tackle position. They don't have a left tackle on the roster that I would personally be like, hey, look, you go out there and you protect Will Levis. They don't have one, so they're going to need to get a guy, and I think Alt would be the perfect option. But don't be surprised if there's a trade back. You know, I know there's interest in J.C. Latham, you know, as a big just pile of clay that Bill Callahan, the O-line guru, could go ahead and mold, and they could flip him to the left side and then possibly have some.
What a slap in the face to NPF, by the way.
NPF, in my opinion, is a right tackle. I think he's a right tackle. It's not a slap in the face.
I'm kidding.
He's a right tackle to me. I wouldn't put him at left. He should be on the right side.
Well, you mentioned trading back, but with the Titans worry, or how much do you think that seventh pick is in demand? Because we know that the run on quarterbacks is looking at the top three, but do you think that there's going to be a demand for teams trying to trade up? Is that seventh pick actually valuable depending on how the draft shakes out?
Yeah, depending on how it shakes out. And I think if you look at, obviously, Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, whatever direction you want to go with those guys are going to be the first three picks. In Arizona, okay, what happens? Do they take Marvin Harrison Jr., or they look to trade out? We know Monty Osifor is one that he's pretty aggressive on draft day. He was last year. So we'll see what happens there. But if he gets past four, you know, Harbaugh is very likely to take one of those receivers or Joe Alt. So you got that or Latham. You know, so now you're starting to look at things, and it's like, okay, well, at seven, J.J. McCarthy, you know, could a team like the Raiders, you know, 13 and 44, jump up to seven and take McCarthy? You know, could a team like the Vikings, 11 and 23, jump up to seven and take McCarthy? That's something that could happen. I think, you know, that Cardinals and Chargers pick, that's going to be the one to really really watch, you know what I mean? Because if they stay on course as far as getting Harrison and then getting, you know, Neighbors or Alt or Latham, the Titans, that pick is going to be pretty intriguing for a lot of franchises looking for quarterback.
Again, we're talking to Teron Davenport from ESPN here on Cofield and Company. I do have to ask, do not laugh at me when I ask you this question. Does Malik Willis have a shot at this starting job? Is this a competition, or is Will Levis just the de facto starter?
Oh, no. Will Levis is the starter. There isn't a competition there. Mason Rudolph, you know, there's a competition possibly for the backup role, but Malik Willis right now he's clawing and scratching to be on the roster. Now, of course, some of these modifications as far as the roster requirements, you know, being able to house a third quarterback a little bit easier will help him. But, no, Will Levis is the guy. In fact, this year, what they're doing is really looking at things and examining this closely. He's going to get the white glove treatment because they're trying to find out, is this the guy that they can wrap the franchise around? And especially with him having two more years after this year on his rookie low cost deal, you know, as far as being a second round pick.
Running out of time a little bit, but I was very excited for Derrick Henry to move on because I'm so excited about Tajay Spears, and then all of a sudden it's like, no, it's Tony Pollard. Why is Spears not looked at as the guy?
No, he's looked at as the guy. They're just going to go with two, and Callahan has used two running backs before. Spears is a guy, you know, with the modification as far as the kickoff rules, he's going to get a lot of burn from that perspective also. You know, there were times after games where I was told that, you know, I was like, hey, he's pretty worn down. You know what I mean? So you have to weigh that out. It's just a matter of bringing in another guy, and it's just going to balance out. They're going to have the two-headed monster.
Teron, we appreciate a couple minutes. Thank you so much.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate you guys. Take it easy.
Good spot there. Good book. Nice job, Damon. Teron Davenport, ESPN.com. You can hear him often on ESPN Radio as well. Is there a wild card for the Tennessee Titans?
Wait, can they make the wild card?
No, is there a position that they could take and shock people?
I mean, receiver to me is the surprising one because he was just talking about taking one. Like, I know that they're older, but they've got names there, which is kind of weird. But that seems to be the one to go. Why? What were you thinking?
Well, I think this would be horrific, but Rand Carthon was mentioning another position of need, and there is a highfalutin dude at that position. Tight end.
Tight end?
Yep. Tight end 12-1. First round pick for the Titans, O lineman minus 400, wide receiver plus 350, edge 7-1, tight end 12.
I mean, I think anybody starting with five is going to have that conversation.
But you are 100% against a tight end in the top 10.
Yeah, the financials don't work out for a tight end there.
I still love the argument. You should have been witness to it. Horowitz didn't know what to do. The Raiders play-by-play boy sat down with us and
yes,
and wanted to argue this point. And he's like, well, what if he turns out to be Kelsey? And Adam's like, nope, doesn't work.
It's almost even worse if he's like a Hall of Fame type player.
And then Adam just kept coming around corners and was like, no, I'm going to double down, triple down, whatever you have for me. I'm telling you, it's not worth it.
Yeah, the financials just don't matter because one of the whole things about taking a guy in the first round is that you get him under a fifth year of control, and if your fifth year of control isn't worth anything because it's a tight end, you've wasted the pick.